Hey everyone, Brian Beeler here with the Storage View podcast. With me today, I've got Brian Carpenter from Pure Storage. Another Brian, and you spell it correctly even, so that's good.
Yeah, I do. You know, being a Texan, we say I'm a name, not a city. There is that Brian, Texas, which is actually where I went to college, but yeah, B-R-I-A-N.
What do you think about Brian's with Y's? I vacillate. Sometimes I get angry and think about what had their parents done to them to you know, maim their name in such a way.
Well, you can't blame them, but I do generally have a...
Yeah, I know. I go straight for the parents. Yeah.
I have a level of distrust. I question a lot about them, but it's okay. They're still allowed to be here. I mean, they should have been a Ryan, but, you know.
Yeah, why even bother? Why ruin our name is my point.
We're making somebody really
mad.
So
you...
Right now.
Good. We're going to get into the storage thing, but you were talking about college. You went to A&M, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, I tried to go to A&M. In the meantime, I tried to like run a business and be an entrepreneur and all those kind of things. And so, you know, I failed in and out of A&M. In my heart, I still identify as an Aggie. However, I technically graduated from Laterno University with a 9-month-old on my hip. So like, as a reasonably sized adult, I went to, you know, the night school kind of thing.
That's funny. Well, you know, everyone takes their own journey. I saw that in your LinkedIn profile, and I was just thinking about A&M because I haven't been there, and all I know about A&M is about football. But my son and I, the older one, were down for the F1 race in Austin two summers ago. And so he would have been a freshman, I think, a freshman in summer. So going into a sophomore year. Anyway, we're down there watching the F1 race and stayed for an extra day. And they've got this great zip line. It's kind of south of the city, south of the city near the track. And so we blew off Monday and hung out in Austin area and we're doing fun things like that. And my wife forgot to call in to the school and say, you know, Ethan's not going to be there today. And so the school called her and she panicked. And she's a great woman, but she's a really complicated liar. So... anytime she gets flustered, her story gets really too complex for what it should be. It could have just been, yeah, oh yeah, he's sick. Sorry, I forgot to call. No, she tells them he's on a college tour. And of course, then they said, great, where? And she panicked and she says, Texas A&M. So I'm at the end of this zip line, just finished the run and everyone else is coming down. And then, you know, we're all walking into the next one. And I said to Ethan, I said, just so you know, you're on a Texas A&M school visit. And he's like, what's that? So funny thing is both of our zip line instructors, the security people, you know, that run the zip line, they both went to A&M. So they gave him a quick rundown of everything he should know. So now you're my third A&M expert should we need it.
Yeah, well, we look forward to having him as a future former alumni, you know, so... Let's go, Ethan.
Something like that. Yeah. All right. So let's get back into the crux of why we're here. Pure Storage. Everyone knows Pure. They've been around for a long time. Specifically, though, what are you doing there? Because you're on a product line that maybe not everyone knows about.
Yeah. So I'm the senior director of FlashBlade Technology Strategy. The layman's version of that is that I focus on, both obviously important customer conversations, and I see customers on a daily basis where possible. And then I take... customer feedback and bring it directly into engineering. So I straddle engineering as well as, you know, field sales. It's the perfect job for this Brian. It is 100% on FlashBlade. So obviously Pure has the flagship product that built the name that Pure has, which is FlashArray. We do have other products. You think about things like FlashStack and all the other things that are out there, and even Pure One as a product. FlashBlade, being kind of the second storage product that came out, is focused on unstructured content. It is focused on unified fast file and object storage, right? So that being kind of the definition of how you consume unstructured content and think about which ways you have to store it. And so that's what I do for, on my day-to-day is focus on FlashBlade as a product and, unstructured outcomes as the way to deliver that product.
Okay. Yeah. We just did a project with, FlashArray and, NVIDIA looking at, the impact of Rocky and NVMe over Fabric and so all the new, not new, but the new to most of the enterprise, you know, ways of taking advantage of an end-to-end NVMe configuration, which is pretty cool. But so on your product, let's talk about that a little more specifically. Start with the hardware, and then let's come back around to market and where this sits compared to the traditional Array product. This is a flash blade, is made up of a chassis and blades, right? It's that simple to start.
It is.
And so talk about the blade concept and how it's similar, dissimilar from a traditional compute blade chassis, and what you guys are doing here, because you've got everything from fabric and RAM and CPU and storage in these little blades that mount into the chassis.
Yeah. And I mean, of course you understand that we try to define, there's obviously all these guiding principles by which we built the product. And so you say, oh, you have hardware. I mean, the hardware, if we say it, you know, in simple terms, you know, the hardware was built, and it's obviously extremely elegant. And then you can get into conversations about, like, why would you choose to build your hardware when XYZ, you know, obviously all that gets laid to bear, and we may not have time today to do that. But, you know, you think about, we wanted to consider performance. And there's a reason why, even with object, you know, consider performance. And we wanted to consider how people consolidate workloads, especially on-prem. And then, you know, you want simplicity. You want that. I mean, you mentioned, you know, we're Pure. I mean, here Pure has a definition, and everybody understands it to be simple. And that's a key thing, right? You want it to be, you know, as easy as possible for people to consume what they're doing so they can focus on what matters. And in this case, it's like, how do you attack the unstructured market? Well, obviously you want it to be scale out. Obviously you want it to be file and object. You need to understand how you store that in flash. And again, Pure being all flash, you know, was one of the other things of, like, what does that look like from an all flash perspective? And when I tell customers about it, it's like, you know, the thinking, not the principle of design, but the thinking of design is, there's all these things that you can do at a hyperscaler. You got the scale out, you got all these other things. It's super simple for them to consume those things. But you want to rationalize that on-prem, because some workloads still expect that on-prem. And so when they do, you know, how do you get that hyperscaler experience on-prem, but, you know, still easy, consolidated, performant, all that? That is FlashBlade. Now, the hardware, it is blades. A single chassis for you has 15 blades in it. Those blades each have compute, NAND. They also have NVRAM, all of that. You know, and it's not NVRAM the way you think of it. It's so we don't have to have that cost. It's actually, you know, cap-backed DRAM, you know, again. But that's not really the point, right? We have this great hardware that was built to do direct flash, you know, so, and we could get into direct flash if you want, which is, you know, understanding what it means to actually have flash in the system and managing it accordingly. And one of those things is to unlock the parallelism and concurrency, you know, back to your consolidation thing. So all of that is, we built hardware to be able to do the things that allow the software to really highlight, right? And that's that Purity OS. And so Purity does all the rest of the great things that customers see, and manage that simplicity, manage the, you know, the care of the flash and all the other things involved, and give you that simple UI where you can get replication in like three clicks. You know, don't quote me, it might be four.
So take a minute, because FlashBlade's been around for a while. What are you, 3 years now, 3.5, something like that, on this product?
Yeah, in market about three and a half years. The product is a little bit roughly 7 years old from inception.
Okay. So in market, and you come out, and I'm not obsessed with the hardware, but I think the hardware is really important, because it's a fundamental change. There were others that were after this kind of unique design, not necessarily yours, but like DSSD had a really interesting design that was not dissimilar in approach. You guys obviously have stuck with it and kept going, where, you know, that didn't work out so well. But I want to think about these chassis and how you slot these in. So over 3 years, the concept has remained the same, but as adoption has come along that curve, what have you learned from those early days in terms of how customers want to consume these? Are they getting a couple still to dabble and then grow? Are they, you know, slamming a couple chassis in right away with 15 blades, going all whole hog on it? Like, what's the model for growing into this thing?
Yeah. See, by the way, I didn't answer fully, because I said it was 4U and 15 blades. An entire namespace is actually up to 42U and 150 blades, right? So you can scale out. I mentioned that scale out experience. Start as few as 7 blades, go up to 150. All with the simplicity of just, you know, add another blade in. So now you say, how do people consume it? There are certain people who think they have a fixed outcome and they'll get a fixed amount. But in general, most people are investing in one workload and then the rest of the workloads sort of come to them afterwards. And that's where that UFFO story really resonates, is that, like, you know, people start with one thing and even sometimes they justify it with one thing. But they're expecting two or three other workloads to get there from consolidation perspective. And so most people will buy, even if they buy one chassis, will buy the XFM, that external fabric module. Again, as far as peer is concerned, all the cabling's managed inside. It's very low cable count, very low port count to your network, no external load balancing, none of that crazy stuff that you have to do. But you can scale up to 150 blades, and whether it's file and object or both. And so they start to do that, and they'll buy whatever they think they need, and then they can add a blade as they want to. And some people are starting to consume it with Pure as a Service as well, right? So they're actually getting, you know, they're getting it in an operational model, and consuming it like a real cloud consumption, you know, to power their unstructured content in their private cloud.
So when you think about the scaling, because you're scaling capacity in these blades, right? The storage is native to the blade.
Yeah.
What, I want to talk about workloads and maybe you'll answer that as part of this conversation, but what's instructing your customers on how to do that? Because it seems to me that when you invest in another blade or another couple of them, that your decision-making factor, which includes storage capacity at that point, is a little more serious than buying a standard U.2 SSD that is, you know, maybe easier to swap out. I don't know. How do you think about that from a capacity decision planning in this product?
Yeah. So you did mention DSSD earlier, which I, you know, in all respects, the things that Andy and team did there were amazing. From a again, if you look at DirectFlash and you look at DSSD, it's not a dissimilar experience, which is let's get all of those things that are holding back flash out of the way and make it simpler, make the path shorter. Then the difference, you know, where you diverge is it's super easy to consume if it's an open protocol that everybody knows, like NFS and S3 and even SMB. You know, that's kind of nice and easy. So that's packaged up nice and well. The second thing you said is like, okay, so what about scale points? Well, certainly there are customers who are going to scale performance, and there are certainly customers who are going to scale capacity. And that, you know, they sort of understand that. Again, use cases dictate solutions approaches. You're going to ask them, what are you doing? What's the problem? But the problem is traditional architectures, especially those that gravitate towards unstructured, all want to scale everything together in this like commodity experience where it's all, you know, you have triplicates and all these other things, and you're buying compute and memory and storage without necessarily understanding what you don't have to do. So we do allow people to disaggregate and leverage NFS and S3 and then do that other compute separately. But inside the system, we actually scale our compute on each blade as well as our capacity on each blade, which means when you're adding space, you're adding that performance you need to go along with it, right? So it is linear scale out from both a performance experience as well as a capacity experience. Now, if you're super high throughput, but you have a low capacity need, you're probably gonna choose our smaller blades. If you're high capacity, but you still get all the benefit of the great throughput, you're going to choose the larger capacity blades. And as FlashBlade evolves, you know, that story is going to get even more mature. And we're going to be able to do even more of that kind of experience where they can really see great density with all the simplicity and all the performance and you know, with, you know, as the market matures.
Sure. So let's talk about some of the workloads, because I want to hone in on some of these concepts, because I think when you look at unstructured just generally, it can mean so much to so many people, ranging from file repositories that have almost no performance need whatsoever to something much more business critical. When you guys started with FlashBlade, what was the initial pull in terms of, because you were talking about how customers would say, I've got one workload that's problematic or could benefit from something like this. What workload was that most often, or what were the top couple?
Well, you understood it for sure, which is, FlashBlade isn't for everything today. Candidly, no single thing is, I mean, everybody who has a golden hammer is usually wrong. But it is very good for what it does. And so initially we saw a lot of people who had existing filers, existing object stores, and they had a specific workload that wasn't functioning appropriately. It wasn't being appreciated by the underlying infrastructure. And so, you know, the goal there is pull that workload off, put it on FlashBlade, get all the performance and all the, you know, scalability and experience that you need. And then they'll start to find other workloads and put them on, just like you said, which is why it's nice that it can scale linearly one blade at a time. And you can, you know, that's pretty easy investment protection. But the drivers for those workloads, you know, early on, I would call it technical computing. Today, it's much more diverse, right? You know, you've got clearly machine data. You know, you've also got a lot of data reusability experiences where people want to put something on and then leverage it from multiple different stacks. You know, there's, you mentioned it, machine learning, AI, whatever you want to call it, you know, that also is a clear experience where we see a lot of success with FlashBlade. But then you go all the way to data protection. Data protection is a huge driver in this, and all flash data protection is a real thing. You know, if you look at the maturity of the market, you know, it was time, and it's not just about data protection. In reality, you can put data away, but if you can't restore it, it doesn't help you, right? So rapid restore is where it's at, and even things like spinning up VMs on the platform and things like that are real use cases. And then, of course, fast object. Now, a couple of years ago, that wasn't a story. But when you see the throughput and the latency that a hyperscaler can give you, and then you rationalize that on-prem, and the current use cases for on-prem were all like cheap and deep, that's a broken conversation. And so application performance around object is a key driver, and we're seeing a ton of adoption around fast object as well. And that unified fast file and object is a new category of storage. And so part of our responsibility is to educate about it and show you that it's here, you know, so.
Well, just stay there for a minute, because you're talking about on object stores where you'd have customers that have had workloads there, and maybe help me, because I always, not always, but I often think of object, and I know it's changing, as sort of slow, cheap, deep storage that's meant for retention, not for performance. And I wasn't wrong in that thought, because most of the solutions that we were getting pitched, whether it was, you know, AmpliData or ECS or Cloudian or any of the other types of solutions there, they were always talking about, you know, capacity, cost and operational cost and all that sort of thing. And even in the early days, we did some work on a cluster that had a little bit of flash in it for logs. And there was always the notion that you could put flash into it, but that customers didn't want to make that investment. Clearly, that's changed, at least with your customers that are perhaps more sophisticated if they're looking at flash to solve these problems. And you talk about an education problem, or not a problem, but getting to market and talking more about these things and what your capabilities are. How do we get past the concept of thinking about object as slow, or am I just lagging the curve on that one?
Again, not everything for everybody. You've said it before. Tape still exists, and it still will. I do think that there's going to be some disk-based data protection strategies, and they'll still exist. And, you know, everything doesn't happen instantly. But, it clearly does not happen overnight. But if you look at kind of first of all, the founding vision of FlashBlade, while it's paying off in what we're seeing with customer adoption, didn't include data protection. Where it came from was customer demand. We had customers running as a service in multiple different types of models, not hyperscaler as a service, you know, but even service provider as a service, and even internal customers who had business objectives, clear business objectives for protecting business continuity. And existing solutions were not meeting their needs. It's great that you can back up a petabyte of data, but if it takes a week to restore it, it doesn't matter. You know, they didn't do their job. And so they were saying, help. Right. And candidly, at first it was like that we're not the ones to help you. And the result was it's a huge market. And we, you know, we've gravitated, you know, we've come to it. We've learned to understand it. We've partnered around it. Great announcements, you know, even last week, we can get to it later if you want, but you know, the announcement with Cohesity and Flash Recover, is a great example of exactly where things are going. And it's going to have to mature just like anything else does. It's not for everything and everybody. But those people who expect more out of their business continuity are gravitating to rapid restore for a reason. And you combine that with FlashBlade's safe mode and our ability to help them with ransomware in a credible fashion. It doesn't mean we protect their firewall and all that other stuff, but like we help with the restore portion and the data protection portion of ransomware threats. It's a great use case, and we're seeing it constantly. So I can have a conversation in the morning about machine learning, and have a conversation after lunch about data protection, And both of them are extremely engaging, measurably impactful outcomes to those organizations. And it's a lot of fun. That's why I get to wear the orange.
So let's, you hit on two things I do want to address. So let's talk about the data protection element for a moment. You talked about the Cohesity relationship. It sounds like, over the last couple of weeks, Pure has done a good job of making, some progress with partnerships. So Cohesity specifically, what does that mean for your customers? How are they consuming that? And why Cohesity? What attracted you guys to that relationship? What makes that work?
Yeah, I mean, so at first, the first thing you want to look at is like people who know Pure know our culture, and our culture is about the customer. Like our culture is a foundation of thinking about customers a certain way, about engineering a certain way, and about delivering technology in a certain fashion, right? And so the nice thing was the cultures were a really good fit. I like to highlight that first because, you can say all you want about the technology, but if people don't, believe behind it, what happens as a result? And so then let's go down to what it really is, which is Flash Recover is a strategic partnership between Pure and Cohesity. We have our level of industry leading storage innovation, and they have, obviously an impressive backup offering, right? Like I hear it's fun to hear all the other backup vendors mention them, right? It means that it's a very important thing to say about what they're doing to the market. Their bias towards the market and the things that they're focused on are the same as ours. And so, we get this kind of first of its kind, all flash optimized backup called Flash Recover. And so it's going to do really cool things, right? So, we can get into it if you want. I know we have a limited amount of time. We could have an entire podcast about Flash Recover, but I don't think that's the goal.
Let's hit some of that though. I mean, the neat thing I think in terms of the relationship is Cohesity was born into fighting a legacy market in backup and recovery and displacing older technology that hadn't really matured much over the last, some could argue more than a decade, which is not so different than when Pure jumped in the early days with a flash array product, while the legacy vendors were still maybe talking hybrid, maybe talking a little flash, but certainly not a purpose-built all-flash appliance designed to go respond in that market. So I think there's probably an attitude alignment there that makes a lot of sense. What's specific to your customers as we think about backup, and then I do want to talk about other protections, but what is there a specific risk? Is there a specific challenge to fast object type use cases that may be different than traditional backup? I know you're not a backup guy specifically, but I'm wondering if there's some nuance there that's specific to that market.
They obviously have they have so first of all, you got the culture fit correct, right? Like we both agree to the same things. This is jointly engineered. I think the thing here again is a lot about not just backup. We always forget business continuity isn't just backup, it's restore, right? So when you get rapid restore, when you get that safe mode and data protection, things like that, it's about meeting SLAs. It's about, being able to do things like flash to cloud type things where, Cohesity can allow you to go into certain clouds and extend customers' experiences. We customers want to choose an operational model. That's where the flex consumption models can help them. It also is very future proofing. So we do have a ton of people who back up on NFS today. But we're seeing we're also seeing an equal, maybe not an equal amount of people, but a large amount, a reasonable, recognizable amount of people who are moving to object for data protection.
For cost reasons or
simplicity. It's just yet another way to do it. They can do it on cloud, on prem. We can go back to, we didn't even sort of break down your argument around object cost, right? Object is a protocol. It has, and then speed's a whole other factor that people aren't thinking about. You want to bring, if you have a bunch of deduplicated data stored and you've got to restore it and you've got to rehydrate it, you want to go fast. And, especially if you're doing a restore, it's important. And that is actually one of the misgivings in the market from a traditional perspective is the restore is just a thing. It's not. It's important. It's as important as backing up is. because that's what people are looking at, is like, when something goes down, how fast can I get it back? And in the hyperscaler cases, they were talking about missing SLAs that were 24 hours. You know, they were missing them. They were missing it by 50%. And then after they do something like rapid restore, they're meeting it and exceeding it by 10 and 15 fold what they used to be able to do. And then they could buy anything to be able to do that. And FlashBlade is the answer. So, you know, there's a lot that's in, I mean, at the end of the day, we have very common customers who have very common experiences. It's funny how many customers I used to talk to that already had Cohesity. And they're like, how do I put my Cohesity with my FlashBlade? And we have customers who are running with Cohesity, with FlashBlade. So it just, the market demanded it in reality. Mm-hmm. And it's the beginning of multiple partnerships that look like this for customers with data protection. Because candidly, the rapid restore thing is resonating so well.
Yeah. That's interesting. That makes sense. And I think there's some great potential there. And I don't mean to demean the object space. I feel like I came down a little hard on that. But yeah, it just hasn't been as fun and as exciting as you guys are making it here. So I appreciate that that notion of making it fun and fast and putting, you know, a lot of this management intelligence around it, which hasn't necessarily historically been the case. I think a lot of times it's been envisioned as a way to offload expensive, busy filers that guys like an M&E space would have typically spent millions of dollars on, and they're looking for a low cost place to move that off. But you know, everything's changing now. Even that model's changing to the point where, you know, if you're a studio, you might decide, you know, we need to bring something back for this 10-year anniversary or whatever. We're seeing that in cinema right now, where there's very few new movies, but now, you know, Inception's back out on a 10-year anniversary tour. So what do you might have to go pull that off and do some work on it to freshen it up or deliver that experience. And now speed does matter.
Yeah, and I mean, there is a reverse bell curve for data in general, as you look at big pipelines like that over experience, right? It's like ingest super fast, store, maybe sometimes it looks like archive, but then at some point process and reprocess and process again. And file format matters. And so if somebody chooses to ingest an object, they don't want to go store in something else and then, you know, re-ingest an object again. So there's some considerations like that around design and architecture. But again, think about it. Everything net new is most likely born in the cloud. And born in the cloud is a story that's like 7 years old, right? So like, it's not just born in the cloud anymore. It's like now you've got elementary school kids that are like nothing but cloud from a workload perspective. And as far as age is concerned, and they expect things. They expect things, including throughput and performance that clouds are offering. And while on-prem is only thinking about the cost profile. And so the answer is, if you're not thinking about the cost profile of object, which is archive and which is fine, and there's a use case for that, but you're thinking about active workloads when all data is fast data and things like that, you start to see expectations of object that are not being met. And I see it every day. People who are using object as a blob for their business application, and it's not fast enough. Or they've got AI and machine learning. We have multiple customers that are doing all object for their AI and machine learning. Try to do that on cheap and deep. It's not going to happen. But you know, obviously they've been doing it with us for NFS for a while. But there's a big transition. And then you see all these, applications, the Kafkas, the Sparks, all these other things that are, can in certain forms leverage, S3, right? So, you know, you look at, you know, just, you know, we have, I could name 1,000 of them because there's so many right now, and we'll see some consolidation of that as well. But like, you can build an entire replacement for a Hadoop ecosystem 100% on object. Now you can run Hadoop in the cloud on object, but on-prem, no. And so people demand it. The workloads are demanding it. And as a result, even data protection is demanding object now. But now you want to restore it. It better be fast.
I think you were right to blame kids for this problem. They don't understand. I mean, I don't know how old you are, but I grew up before the internet. So I accepted the internet as part of my life growing up. And we had before internet, and we had now, which is just we accept it all and we expect everything to be there. But the kids these days, they don't remember what it was like. They don't even know what it was like to not have the internet and not have everything instantly available to you, whether you're on a Chromebook in third grade or if you're working in data storage and want fast object, I guess. But yeah, you're right. Kids have ruined everything.
Yeah. And I mean, I think this might be the same for kids as it is modern data. But like, you know, when you have modern data, it's, you know, it's born digital, right? They're born digital. It's multimodal. I think that's the same for workloads. It's the same as having ADD, which I think every kid has today. So like, you know, because the personality of the data is going to change minute by minute. It's going to be video 1 second, text the next, right? So it's multimodal. It's always flowing, which I think is the same thing as like my kids that never stop. And you know, it's everywhere, right? So the idea of geo distribution. And so, you know, if you look at that, that's modern data. It's also modern kids. So, there we go. Object expects of your workload what your kids expect of you, which is give it to me now and don't tell me it's going to take 38 hours.
Man, I'm going to end up the angry old man on the porch yelling about back of the day. We had to get up and physically change the channel on the TV and had black and white and had nothing to watch and we liked it.
Yeah.
Oh, kids these days.
That's not the world today.
I guess not, but yeah, there's a certain nostalgia, I suppose. All right, speaking of nostalgia, if we want to go back and deal with something else, you mentioned ransomware, and of course we did the pod last week with Exagrid and talked about ransomware there quite a bit. And actually Rick Vanover from Veeam and I are doing a live stream tomorrow on ransomware. It is a big deal. And I'm wondering, because you mentioned it, and let's dive into it a little bit, how much weight is the ransomware problem being put on the storage hardware guys? It seems like, obviously, you're holding the data and data gets ransomed, but where is it your responsibility from your customer's viewpoint, maybe, or from your own company-wide viewpoint to engage on ransomware versus integrate with backup and recovery and specialized ransomware products and that sort of thing? Just help me understand your perspective on that.
So ransomware is a serious problem, right? So we all have to take it seriously, actually. So everybody has, when you say like, you know, is it on any specific somebody's shoulders, storage, whatever, it's on everybody's shoulders. And so everybody has to put their best engineers towards that problem. And so, you know, and you try to do everything you can. And so the data protection vendors are doing what they can, and the network and the firewall vendors are doing what they can. And from a storage perspective, you know, what could we do? And, you know, it's interesting because we already had a feature. It's been there for 2 years, at least, called Safe Mode inside of our product. And it was put there for a very clear reason, which is more of the, and you could do percentages. I even heard it on one of your recent podcasts. You could do percentages over insider threat versus external threats and all that kind of stuff. There's still tons of internal threat, including just the old fashioned, one of the Brian with a Y administrator got mad and decided to delete a bunch of data. How do you protect against that? And it's not about restoring, it's just about protecting it. And so Safe Mode was put in to give you an immutable snapshot of all of your data. That cannot be changed by any administrator. It requires interaction with our support. It requires a certain level of executive to approve removing that snapshot and that schedule. And that gives the business a level of experience. And it turns out, so it's not a ransomware product. It is a Safe Mode product that can be leveraged clearly for ransomware. It can be leveraged in partnership with Cohesity, Veeam, Veritas, everybody, you know, Commvault, you name it. RMAN snapshots, SQL dumps, like all of that can all be leveraged from that perspective. And it's on NFS today. It will be, you know, we are going to be, while objects are still considered to be quote unquote immutable, there's still things that can happen. And so we will be putting it on object as fast as possible. And so that's our strategy around data protection. Ransomware on FlashBlade. Obviously, there's a huge data protection and business continuity strategy. We're also looking at it and how these things can be done on FlashArray, right? And there's really cool things that can be done from a pure one perspective and from a logging and monitoring and machine learning perspective. All of those things are on Pure's docket. All of those things will be done in a time that engineering allots. And it's all for the customer because this ransomware thing is not an if, it's a when. And we have to do it for everybody. It's an extremely compelling conversation. Everybody has to have the conversation. It's not going to stop. It's going to get worse. and we need to be here to protect our customers holistically, right? It's defense in depth. It's not this one thing is the answer.
Well, it is going to keep going because we're seeing it be a profitable outcome for these guys that are doing it. Like, you know, kidnapping back in the 50s, right? If you pay the kidnappers, you'll probably get your thing back, but they're going to keep doing it because it's a profitable business model. I don't know how you stop it. So yeah, you're right. You have to be ready for it. And for IT admins that are knee deep in this, anything you can give them in that toolbox, I think is pretty important.
Yeah, there's very few organizations who can literally just stop it, who have the amount of resources required to have the level of defensibility where it's when your business is IT, period, you're probably pretty good at it. When your business is something else and your tool to get to that point is IT, you've got risk. And it's not because you have bad people. It's just because there's not enough resources in the world to stop somebody who really wants to do what they want to do. And so
We saw that with Tesla, right? That that story came out a couple of weeks ago about the guy that was someone was trying to pay him to get a USB drive into the office. I mean, you can do a lot physically to protect from that, but if someone has access and wants to hurt you, then they can hurt you. Or the person that clicks the link in the email, I mean, that just starts the cascading effect.
Yeah.
There's so many ways in, whether malicious and truly ransomware or just looking to cause damage. It all sort of falls in the same bundle. But for those businesses that get locked out of their data in a true ransomware motion, and now what? You're at zero, potentially, until you get that resolved. So anything to help solve that problem is good. You mentioned Pier 1 real quick. I want to make sure to hit on that too. Talk a little bit about what that product is.
First of all, since I don't work in Pier 1, I'm not going to do a good enough job of this. But from my perspective and from an IT consumer's perspective, it is a centralized console by which you can see all of your products. You can see things like telemetry data. You can manage your fleet. You can get it on the iPhone. Pure pioneered this in the market. There are other people who have, tried to mimic it. But in general, it is a huge tool. The last conversation I had, the person I was on the phone with, who is a fantastic enterprise customer, said, I challenge every other vendor I talk to make their product look like Pure and Pure One. That's all I need to say about it at that point. But it allows you to manage your arrays remotely, manage your cases. It does a bunch of things in the background, really cool things that actually are powered by FlashBlade in some cases. Drinking your own champagne, right? Eating your own dog food. Where the Pure One Meta actually does a bunch of machine learning, fingerprinting. Most of our cases are open proactively by the system. We aggressively monitor systems that are calling home using privately managed data where it's all protected for your safety. It's a great tool. There are other things that it does too. There's like VM analytics and all these other things that bolt on that I am not doing a good job of. And so hopefully you get somebody on from Pure One because by itself, it's its own product.
Well, there's certainly been the scramble amongst really everyone, all the big IT vendors to offer visibility into data, the products, the connections to all the different systems. So I think that management piece is going to be on that list of softer things that you need to have now, because it's not, you guys might be fast and that's great, but at a certain point, it's not just about fast or it's not just about the IOPS, right? It's about everything else that goes into that experience, management included, because people don't want it to be hard. It doesn't have to be hard. Not that everyone else is hard, but it's some of them are more difficult than others, and having more visibility is better than less.
It all goes back to simplicity, doesn't it, though? All goes back to simplicity, and I think it's Pure One, the UI that we have, the manuals that we don't have, all of those scream the simplicity that people expect, so they can focus on the other parts of their organization where complexity is necessary, and that's where they need to spend their time.
One thing we didn't talk about yet specifically, and I want to hit that, and I think it fits well with this control plane management concept, is Pure's cloud story. How are you guys viewing cloud connectivity as part of, well, FlashBlade specifically, but maybe in a more broad sense for these types of workloads where data is often moved to the cloud or shifted around, or just what's your general take on cloud then and integration?
Yeah. So, I mean, Pure as a whole, the cloud story is pretty big. You know, you see things like snapshots to cloud and backup, you know, like all these other things. We have Cloud Block Store, you know, which is, you know, basically literally FlashArray in Amazon coming to Azure, all these other kind of things. There's a huge cloud strategy within Pure. When it comes to FlashBlade, we obviously have a relationship with cloud as far as workloads moving on and off. We see a lot of data movement. We have customers that are moving to GCP, leveraging FlashBlade with Object. You know, they do it with Amazon, you know, other things like that. That being said, there's always this thought process of like, hey, I want to run a FlashBlade in cloud. If you heard all the things we said earlier about leveraging parallelism, concurrency, performance, things like that, it's not a short-term answer for us. Is it an eventuality? You never say no. It's not a short-term answer. Even running it as like software only is not a short-term answer for us. So most of our cloud functionality looks around things like multi, hybrid cloud, and tethered cloud, right? So you look at things like Kubernetes and the number of customers that are running Kubernetes both on block and file, and you know the fact that it's essential. And the one of the biggest things that powers things like you know that experience is Pure Service Orchestrator, which you know layers across all of the products to simplify platform consumption for your platform of Kubernetes, right? So it's like, I want block, no problem. It's all API driven. I want file, no problem. I want object, no problem. And so you see people doing things like infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, OpenShift, Tanzu, whatever you want, whatever kind of flavor you have, Rancher, it almost doesn't matter what buzzword you say. There is an answer that has a relationship between delivering storage simply, programmatically, leveraging PSO to simplify your platform operation so that you can deliver your workloads and your applications. And so that, and then at that point, that is now, hey, I want to be able to move my workload between data centers. That's a functionality of like, hey, you've got this workload rationalized onto Kubernetes. You can then choose to put it onto Amazon AKS, right? You could put it on GKE. You could put it on, I'm blanking on Azure's version of Kubernetes, but you get the idea. That's where we see most of the real, and even Tanzu, abstracting all three of those and letting you run it all through there. That's where we see the real, like kind of real story. There's certainly data movement stories, but most people's cloud is like, how do I tether my mobile, my hybrid cloud? How do I tether my multi-cloud strategy as a result? So
when you're talking to customers, this, I think we keep circling around on this, where it's not necessary, the performance is important, but that may not be the primary thing, that all of these other integrations and touch points are perhaps more critical. What's your sense too on how much your customers care? I know I started by talking hardware because I'm a bit of a nerd and like the hardware, but what's your sense of how much customers care about the underlying hardware versus outcomes anymore?
I think the way we built this thing proves that they really care most about the outcomes. And what they really care about is not having to worry about the outcomes, right? You want it to be predictable. And so we built great hardware to deliver Pure's promise of predictability and sustainability and performance and all those things. And then we built Purity as, you know, the other half of that promise of like leveraging that world-class hardware to make it what it is. But when people buy it, they buy it for the outcome. I need my time to train on machine learning to go down. I need my time to restore critical business data to go down, right? I need to be able to leverage a single platform for multiple different use cases, lowering my TCO across all of them and simplifying my operational spend. All of the, you know, those are just very simple examples of it. And we see it all the time, right? So, and I don't want to have to tune. I don't want to have to deal with cables or network complexity or any of these other things. Those are all reasons why people buy it. It is to make their life easier. And it sounds like kitschy, but it's real. I mean, I ran an IT department, and I know what it's like to wake up in the middle of the night on a holiday to buy a text at 4 a.m. because your infrastructure missed you, right? And so we build what we build to simplify at least what we can do, and we give great feedback based on good engineering to help people simplify what they do, so that they can simplify their operation deliver outcomes to the business, which is what the business cares about. Like, none of us have a name on our resume that wasn't written to help the business deliver outcomes that are important, right? So, you can be a nerd all you want, but your nerdiness is to help the business deliver what it has to deliver to its customers in general.
How much, too, of this conversation with customers is, ultimately it comes down to cost. And I'm just sort of thinking about on a go forward basis, because I know on the FlashArray side, they had an announcement about adopting QLC a couple weeks ago. And I just wonder a little bit about how much you've got to think about things like this in the architecture for FlashBlade, about how to continue to add the services, but also embrace new technology to help the economics get better, easier to consume. I know you can do some of that with hardware sometimes, but on the other hand, you guys also have other consumption models. But what do you think about that from a investment protection standpoint to make sure that you're able to be as aggressive as you can on pricing?
You sort of said it, right? You said the how and the why when you asked your question. It's like, why do people want QLC? Clearly, economics is a very important portion of it. But now they also sort of are asking for density and capacity, right? And I think, we believe people also want cooling, right? Like when you think about the fact that people are moving more and more towards colocation in general, rapidly moving as a result of change today. Now they have to think about their density. Like, how many racks are they buying? They have to think about their cooling because they're getting charged. They might have been on a triple net before and now they're not. But they also want reliability and availability, which is key tenets of Pure. And they want consistency and predictability, which is why they want all flash versus hybrid. You combine all those up, and of course, you gravitate right to QLC. There aren't really any storage vendors that have invested like Pure Storage when it comes to understanding flash, right? And if you want to go watch Pete Kirkpatrick's presentation on a different storage platform company about QLC, he goes on to it for hours in a level that will teach you so many things you wish you never heard. Really, really fascinating stuff. But the whole point of it is there are changes in the way QLC operates. So I think the thing that matters is TLC, just like we said earlier, tape hasn't gone away, disk backup hasn't gone away, and neither will flash backup necessarily replace everything immediately. MLC, TLC are not going to go away. QLC has its own performance profile. It has its own endurance profile. And as a result, we have to be cognizant of those things in the way we design. So people are going to want it. They're going to want it for cost. Capacity, and we will address those use cases, and it's perfect for that. And there are other things, there are certain workloads that just may not fit on QLC. It's not either or, it's all, right? And so, we're constantly looking at how you leverage QLC in every platform, FlashArray today, FlashBlade in the future, for giving customers what they really are asking for, which is, cost, density, cooling, the things that impact them in a simple, sustainable, predictable manner.
It's funny because we hear about density all the time, but I haven't heard a lot of customers really concerned about that. It sounds like you are, or are hearing more of it anyway. What happened there? You think it's more of customers had these on-prem data centers and didn't, to add another couple U here and there didn't matter. Now that they're paying by rack U at a colo, it's real again.
That's certainly a driver. I think energy, people the shift towards stewardship of the earth is here. Even rewards from a tax perspective are here. You look at energy consumption, you look at just, pure density, if you have something that only takes up four rack units or even just one rack for, multiple petabytes worth of namespace, and it's got just a couple of cables, there's a lot of things that density does for you. And so it's very important on top of power and cooling. And so all flash at peak usage versus all like hybrid at peak usage. And like we've had customers that have consolidated. Certainly, it's an extreme. We've had customers take 50 racks down to one rack, right? And it's that means a lot. I don't care what you say. I've had a data center and I've walked through them. You know, it's like, you know, if you can have half a cage, it's $20,000 a month, whatever it is. You know, it's in New York, it's $200,000 a month, whatever. It's important. And so, yes, people who are co-locating into other facilities certainly feel the pain first. But I think there's a lot of operational complexity that comes along with just having that much sprawl. And, you know, people appreciate the density, right?
Well, there's the other thing, too, on the density side is we look at the where the computing gets done and where the analytics get done. And now the edge is hot again, right? We used to think of it as a little bit more boring on robo use cases. But we're seeing more sensors and data collected and analyzed at the edge. Are you seeing that with this product too, in terms of, you know, these modern again workflows of distributed computing and especially analytics or even surveillance and things of those lines?
Yeah, I tend to break it into light edge and heavy edge. That heavy edge is, you know, if there is a place where you can have a closet where you can get 10U. You know, they're probably running hundreds, if not thousands of sensors in that location, and they need to do the processing where they're at. And candidly, a lot of times edge is such a random thing, right? Like, you know, you take things like 5G into account and all of a sudden edge is really heavy. It's just yet another data center. And you've got 50 locations where you need to run a machine learning model, and you need to be able to take an ingest of thousands of images per second, and you need to be able to distribute the model. You need to save it, you know, do all that kind of stuff. You've got to maintain the model in production. You want consistency, performance, predictable. And, you know, so yes, edge is a real use case. Do we see it every day? No. But you're seeing it more and more frequently, just like everything else. You know, you see there's this, I wouldn't even call it linear, right? It's probably, you know, again, I should probably know math better. It's not a logarithm. It's, you know, but it is a non-linear, you know, frequency of having more and more conversations around heavy edge. There's still tons of light edge, but light edge calls home to heavy edge. Heavy edge calls back to the core. Each of them is starting to have a shift in the way that they look at data. But long-term, edge is going to become heavier. And I think Anderson Horowitz predicted that like 3 years ago. Like, I remember a blog post I read about that, and they were like, oh, yeah, cloud's really important right now, but in X number of years, cloud is going to be just like everything else, and edge is going to be where it's at. And they're really good at knowing those kind of things. And when I saw that, I was like, it turns out they, again, are correct.
Well, are you seeing we're seeing edge locations grow and what they're doing at those locations grow, but is it displacing the traditional data center in that hub and spoke sort of model that we're used to, or is it net new work that's being created out in the field, do you think?
That's a good question. What we're seeing is not, I wouldn't call it, it's hard to say. I do think that they are moving things that used to be processed in the core towards the edge. And so from that perspective, the answer is it's displacing. That being said, net new things are being built in the core that are a function of supporting the edge. And so for everything that moves out to move in, it's, again, we talked about kids too much on this thing. You know, if you give if you give your child one toy, you have to ask him to get rid of one. Otherwise, you'll have endless number of toys in her room. You know, something like that.
Life, yes.
Yes. So, you know, so that's happening. You know, you move processing to the edge for machine learning, but you still are probably doing a heavy level of training in the core with a larger data set than you're doing on the edge, right? So like, it's just a shift. It's just like economics. The money doesn't go away. It just shifts to other spots and the way the spend occurs happens. And I think COVID's a perfect example of that. Like, there's an entire niche industry around creating plastic barrier walls behind seats and Ubers that you can buy off eBay for $25. That didn't exist 6 months ago. So like, while spending shifted and people weren't spending as much, there are new things that occur as a result. And so you create a vacuum, you fill it. So yes, workloads are moving to the edge. Replacements are coming into the core is my answer.
Okay. Well, I mean, you talked a lot about some of the container workloads that are just, you know, the born in the cloud guys, if you will, have been doing it forever, but now even mainstream businesses are starting to figure out that there's a lot of operational benefit to using that that mechanism. So yeah, certainly more coming and different types of things coming, and being positioned there is important. So one last thing before we go, I did notice you guys have a test drive FlashBlade deal on the site that you can sign up for. And how is that experience? And I'm just sort of curious, as people are considering maybe this is something I want to check out. It's a little harder these days with fulfillment to get a POC dropped off on the dock, maybe. But sometimes, honestly, I'm skeptical about tools like this because, you know, often they're a little light and don't really show the whole scope. But you know, as objectively as you can, tell me how good your test drive deal is.
So the test drive, and it, you know, we have a team that manages this, and I don't do their marketing, but the test drive is a functional FlashBlade. It is literally the same code that you would get on your FlashBlade, and so you're going to do functional integration type experience, UI, all that kind of stuff, but not performance. We also have POC where you can do simulated data or your own data, and obviously there's considerations for that. So let's put that one with an asterisk. Of like, you know, testing a real production use case, including performance, right? And we have people who do AI tests there, and all those kind of things, and you know, analytics tests and all those in that kind of next level of environment. And I think it's important, to your point. We're not heavily supply chain constrained. Everything's done here. We're able to ship to customers in a timely manner. We've saved a lot of customers bacon on being able to get them hardware when maybe the incumbent couldn't. And so we continue to be able to ship. And we continue to be able to do POCs. So if you have an interest and you need to do it in your data center, I wouldn't be hesitant to ask. Whether it's FlashArray or FlashBlade, we don't because of the way that we manage our hardware, and the great things that our hardware team has done and our supply chain team does, we're able to ship. So challenge accepted on that.
Great. All right. Well, Brian with an I, thanks for checking in today. I really appreciate the conversation, the insight, and in the overall view on FlashBlade. That's pretty cool. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for your time today.